call the meeting to order at 9:10. The clerk will note the roll. We'll have some members coming in late because we have taxes also meeting and the subcommittee employee relations where Representative LaForest is. We have to take any critical votes. We'll have to get those folks. Apologize to everyone who wandered from the basement up to the fifth floor and actually walked up here. Representative Hilty, were you down in the basement too? Every member around the table.
Only because I have another committee meeting down there.
Oh, you're on the gun go up, huh?
Yeah. Do you have to leave for votes, Representative Hilty?
Hopefully not.
Okay. So we'll, what we're going to do is take testimony and an overview of Drive to Excellence first. Why don't we have members just take a quick look at the minutes from the last meeting, if you would, please. It's a markup of the omnibus bill, and I haven't had time to look it over in real detail, but I'm sure it's accurate.
Have you got that much confidence?
I have a lot of confidence. Representative Solberg moves the adoption of the minutes from April 19th. Any questions, deletions, additions? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Good morning, Commissioner. We have what I'm calling kind of a mini, I don't want to say a mini omnibus bill, but it's kind of a cluster of things that we haven't gotten around to doing and need to go somewhere. So we're putting them in this bill, which is a companion to Senator Cascaden's bill. In getting these items conferred out and agreed upon. Couldn't have a better time for having the overview because there is a lot of questions on technology and security and so on and so forth. So what I'm going to do is call on the commissioner. We're going to do an overview, I think, for maybe about 35 minutes or shorter, whatever scale time, but at a quarter to, we'd kind of like to bring the bill forward and have a discussion and amendments and so forth. So good morning, and if you folks could give your names and titles for the record, it would be appreciated.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much. I'm Dana Badgerow, Commissioner of Administration. And I realize the focus this morning is on House File 2243, but my previous testimony before this committee on Drive to Excellence has been preliminary in that it had not yet been fully released by the governor, and we are now, the cat is out of the bag, so to speak, and we can talk fully and openly about all of the recommendations of DRIVE, including the six recommendations that the governor asked us to move forward on. So I will give you, again, a bit of an overview. Some of it will be a small refresher of things that have been covered very briefly before, but just to set the context, and I think it does set a nice stage for our discussion about information technology. There is a handout in front of you. We don't have view graphs or PowerPoint in this room, so you're going to have to rely on the old-fashioned method of looking at the paper. But it is in front of you if you'd like to follow along. As it happens, the Drive to Excellence is in response to three converging factors. Citizen demands for better and faster and more efficient service. Budgetary pressures, and we only have to have sat through some of the omnibus budget bills to understand the tough decisions that we're having to make in all of the budget bills. And then thirdly, a shrinking workforce with almost 50% of the state workforce eligible for retirement in the next few years. So if you turn to the next page, there's a graphic on that page that actually is the encapsulation of what DRIVE is all about. It is a sort of a graphic depiction of state services with, at the top of those pyramid, the agency functions that agencies know how to do extremely well. They know how to manage our natural resources. They know how to deal with our troubled populations. They know how to deal with crime. But then there are functions that support those agency-specific services, which we're calling shared functions, things that can be shared among all agencies are clusters of agencies. And then finally, at the bottom, the what we're calling enterprise or utility functions. So the model for state government that we are proposing in the Drive to Excellence is looking at government differently, not as 24 separate cabinet-level agencies all in their own silos with their own missions and supporting activities, but as an enterprise. The enterprise has a single goal, which is to serve the citizens. And furthermore, citizen access to services ought to be simple and intuitive. And today it is a complex web, very difficult for the citizen to navigate. So if you'll turn to the next page, it gives you a little bit of background. How did we go about this drive to excellence? I think I've testified before that this was an extremely involved process. 205 state employees worked virtually full-time for the better part of 4 months to develop these recommendations. It was led by a steering committee of 9 commissioners of major agencies. It started out with a technology scan. I think that before this very committee, we had to sheepishly admit that we were unable to comply with a statutory requirement for a total inventory of the state's IT assets because we simply didn't have the tools or the infrastructure or the governance model to do so. With the Drive to Excellence, as of September at least, we know what we own, down to the desktop. We also took extensive data surveys of 66 agencies. A number of interviews were conducted. We had national experts in a variety of state services. And then finally, we cultivated over 400 ideas for reform, for savings, and for efficiency. If we turn to the next page, I think we've said before that all of those ideas, after analyzing them and justifying them and developing business cases, 24 of those ideas emerged as being ripe for implementation over the next few years. What Drive to Excellence did is then take those 24, develop the business cases and justify them, indicate the investments required, the savings that could be achieved, the governance model that would be required to get there, the timetable, and the stakeholder analysis. Who would be supportive of these ideas? Who would we need to involve who might have objections to the ideas? We also proposed a sequence, knowing that you could not, it would absolutely gridlock state government if you tried to do all 24 at once. And some of them are foundational. The whole information technology area underpins all of these ideas. And so it had to be addressed first. So if you'll turn to the next page, this, of course, is kind of the bottom line for all of this. There were rough, and let me emphasize, rough estimates of the kinds of savings that could be achieved if we looked at government in a different way. The number derived from the 24 business cases adds up to $570 million. And a run rate thereafter of $160 million a year. Assuming we make the $215 million in investments that might be required. Some of those investments, many of those investments, are in new systems and improved systems. Let me emphasize, not all of that $215 is incremental. We would be doing some of that investment anyhow, replacing maps, for example. We'll be on our agenda sometime in the next few years in any event, and that is included in the $215 million. So let's turn to page 7, and it lists the 6 areas that are kicked off by the governor in early April with 5 executive orders and 1 reorganization order. They are in these 6 areas listed. I'm going to cover the first 5 and just give you a quick overview of what is embraced in each of those 5. And I will leave the information technology area to Keith Payden sitting here to my right, who is the state's chief information officer. If you just take these first 6, actually the savings attributable to these first 6 is $458 million over the first 7 years. So these are not insubstantial reforms. They are major and structural and will have an impact. Let's turn to page 8 and let me start with the first 5 that I'm going to cover. The first one is sourcing. I think just a couple of the relevant facts are represented on this page. We spend at least $1 billion on goods and services that we know of, that we can track through state systems. Through our surveys, we also learned that there are 543 people scattered amongst all the executive branch agencies who are doing buying of some kind. And that's actually a procurement labor cost of $89 million. If you compare that to private sector ratios, that is significantly higher than one would expect in the private sector in terms of numbers of people in an organization dedicated to procurement. There are 25,000 vendors. I think you've heard some of the horror stories. We have 8 cell phone vendors. We have 6 contracts alone for janitorial supplies. We have 1,500 master contracts in place. So what happened with the executive order is nothing more than actually is allowed today by statute, but it requires the agencies to work together with Department of Administration. It creates a position, the Chief Procurement Officer. It's not a new position, but simply the Director of the Materials Management Division with a new name. And it puts in place a strategic sourcing model. And strategic sourcing is simply defined at looking at your requirements across the entire state enterprise, rationalizing and settling on a limited choice in a particular commodity. So whereas today agencies may select any number, almost an infinite number of desktop computer configurations, this would limit agencies to a handful that would meet their needs. The governor's executive order simply says that we will develop strategic sourcing methods and standards. We are, I'm pleased to say, already engaging in some strategic sourcing training. And we are to report to the governor by December 15th on our progress. The next one is licensing. Again, just the simple facts is that we have 40 different agencies who are doing occupational licensing of some kind. Let me emphasize, this does not cover consumer licenses. It does not cover the DNR fishing and hunting licenses. It does not cover driver's licenses, for example. But occupational licenses are being done in a variety of agencies by 800 people with a wide variety of systems, some paper-based, some automated, some modern, some not so modern, and there are a variety of results in terms of the time it takes to obtain a license from an agency in the state of Minnesota. There also is ultimately a need to rationalize our licenses, and that's pointed out by the fact, I think the governor's used this example as well, that if you're to open a restaurant in the state of Minnesota, if you have a liquor license but not an elevator, you are required to get 11 separate occupational and business licenses. So this executive order simply establishes once again a steering committee to look across agencies at our licensing requirements. We will begin with the Department of Commerce, who has some pressing needs for some new automation of some of their occupational licenses. We will use it as a seedbed for a development of an enterprise licensing system. This particular project will be managed in the Department of Labor and Industry. Let me mention that each of these six projects has an owner. The owner is a commissioner of an existing state agency. It will be staffed by a project team from many agencies, and I'll talk about that in just one second. Page 10 talks about grant management. Almost every agency in state government either gives or receives grants, and once again does so with a wide variety of systems, some, in fact, again, paper-based. However, there are several fairly expensive automated systems in place that agencies have deployed to manage their grants. But there is no common organization. There is no common process. For example, there is no common methodology of charging or collecting indirect costs. So we are not necessarily optimizing our recovery on these grants. So what this simply does is takes what was already, this is one of those wonderful situations where a group of state employees had already recognized this need, and we were able to bring that group of state employees together, give them the impetus of Drive to Excellence to move forward, and this project now has been kicked off with an executive order to look across the agencies again, develop common processes and practices. This project will be managed in the Department of Public Safety. Next is building construction regulation. I think there's been quite a bit of talk and discussion about this, but there are taking the code activities of five separate agencies and consolidating them in one in the Department of Labor and Industry. So by a reorganization order that was signed by the governor and will be filed and official on May 13, the plumbing activities of the Department of Health, the building codes from Department of Administration, the Board of Electricity, the residential and remodeler contractor regulation from Department of Commerce, and the fire marshal's code activities, not their enforcement, and as some people refer to them, the people who wear the badges and do the arson and other investigations, but the code activities will be consolidated in the Department of Labor and Industry. This has been widely praised by the construction industry, which is, by the way, 20% of Minnesota's economy, which will give now uniform and consistent application and interpretation of the codes, will eliminate inconsistencies and redundancies. It will be the one-stop shop for code compliance. Then, again, finally, before we turn to information technology as real property, we own a lot of property in the state of Minnesota, and it's managed by 14 agencies with custodial control. We have over 880 leases of property, totaling $66 million. What this really does is begin to understand what we own, its condition, developing a common database and system for managing that property, and having a common approach to the disposition of surplus property, to the co-location and rationalization of existing space that we have. We don't know, for example, occupancy rates of some of our buildings. This would simply gather all of that data together and then form the basis for a strategic plan. And this committee heard a great presentation by the Staubach Company of the kind of strategic plan that we would like to have implemented so that we better understand what we own, so that we aren't in a reactive mode, responding to problems as they occur, but being able to predict them. Just a couple of more kind of housekeeping details about how we're going to go about implementing DRIVE. Before I do that, on page 13, let me just mention that, as I said, we're not implementing everything at once. There are many other ideas and reform areas that are reported on in the DRIVE materials that are deferred until a later date. One of them has to do with customer service innovation. A variety of tools and techniques that we would like to put in place for what we call the walk-in, those few desk front operations that we still have in state government, but the call-in and the consolidation of all of our many call centers, and then our click-in. And this would have to do with a single web portal, a uniform business identifier. But, you know, until we get the information technology infrastructure in place and managed, we are not in a position to address a customer service initiative. And then the other areas are enterprise planning and budgeting, which is taking a look at transactional financial matters, expense reporting, accounts payable and receivable, which today are done in every single agency, consolidating those into a shared service center for efficiency. And same with human capital management, taking the routine benefits administration, employee orientation, the kinds of things that are very transactional but are still today done in every agency, taking them and unifying them and placing them in a single shared services environment. And then finally, there are many, many projects that are reported on in the DRIVE for information technology savings and opportunities for efficiencies, but they require putting the governance structure in place. Finally, I know it's been discussed that here we are trying to create a new agency with the Office of Enterprise Technology. Actually, if you take DRIVE out to its conclusion, there is a no gain of state agencies, because it will provide for not only an Office of Enterprise Technology, but a service organization, which we choose to call Service Minnesota, which would be a morphing of the Department of Administration to deal with these shared services activities, and then an Office of Management and Budget, which would take the strategic functions of state government, planning, finance, debt placement, state economist and demographer, labor negotiations, and place them in the strategic organization. So at the end of the day, we have three staff organizations. We would end with three staff organizations. How are we going to go about doing this? The governor has formed a sub-cabinet, which I lead. It is comprised of the commissioners of human services, finance, revenue, Department of Labor, Industry, and admin. That subcabinet holds its first meeting today. We are kicking off each of the six projects that the governor has initiated. There is a program management office. That's a little bit highfalutin sounding because it's one person. We have hired in the Department of Administration a program director for the Drive to Excellence. We do not intend to staff that office with additional paid full-time equivalents. We will beg, borrow, and steal people from agencies, much as we did the 205 employees who worked on DRIVE. We will use student interns. We will use whatever resources we can find that come to us with no price tag. And then each of the projects will have a lead, a state employee who will lead the project under the guidance of the commissioner. And then each of the projects will have a steering committee comprised of people from many agencies so that there will be multi-agency buy-in to each of these projects. With that, I feel like the Federal Express commercial. I just covered this very quickly, but I want to make sure we leave time for questions. So I'm going to turn it over to Keith Payden to report on the information technology governance.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Keith Payden. I am the Deputy Commissioner of Administration and also the State Chief Information Officer. I'm going to pick up my part of the discussion on page 16. Just a way of background, the state currently spends around $600 million in information technology annually. Most of the spending is not specifically governed by any office. A good deal, if not the majority of the spending, two-thirds of it is done within the agencies without any particular strong coordination or governance. There are 2,400 IT classified employees in the state, again, throughout the agency system. This, of course, as you start to look at the demographics that we alluded to earlier, with respect to a shrinking workforce and retirement, is going to become a critical issue for us to manage, particularly in what is now becoming, again, a highly competitive marketplace for professionals. We have and have found through our survey that was noted earlier a very fragmented operation and infrastructure. These are just some of the highlights of that fragmentation. We have over 1,000 separately managed networks. We have 7 separate email systems which do not speak to one another. We have over 500 and counting, we believe now, state websites managed by individual agencies. And we have over 90 data centers managed across the agencies. This is a symptom of the issue that we have, an outcome of managing these issues in a very fragmented way. Our recommendation to address this, in part, as well as many other issues, is represented in the House File 2243, the creation of the Office of Enterprise Technology. I'm going to just quickly cover 4 questions. How does the enterprise thinking relate to the information technology issue? Why is IT important to the drive to excellence? How is it going to be different? And how is it going to work as we move forward? As Commissioner Badgerill has outlined, I'm on page 18. When viewing the executive agencies as an enterprise and viewing them as a collection of agency functions, potentially shared functions, and utility functions, you wind up coming up with many new ideas for the governance and the effective management of a number of issues, including information technology. So as we look at the sum of all of these pieces, our ability to manage information technology across these pieces is important and is the foundation for the direction that we're moving. Why is it important? Well, first of all, every shared service that Commissioner Badgerill has outlined, both commissioned with the executive orders earlier this month, and as well as in the future, ride and are dependent upon a different mode of operation with respect to information technology strategy. You cannot create a shared service unless you have consistent infrastructure underneath those shared services. So it's critical. Secondly, sharing common IT functions is going to, in addition to supporting those shared functions, improve the operations, improve the economies of those operations, and address issues like security, among others, as we move forward. Page 20. Graphically, on the left-hand side, Minnesota Today, is a fairly rough depiction, but realistic depiction, of how we operate in terms of IT governance today. We have large agencies, multiple size agencies, operating technology in a relatively autonomous fashion. We have a very relatively small central coordinating function known as the Office of Technology today, which really encourages collaboration but really doesn't have the wherewithal to enforce collaboration or enforce standards. There are limited endorsed shared services. Many of those exist in Intertechnologies Group today, but those aren't really shared services because they don't really involve a lot of outside governance, and they are not mandated, as it were, in terms of the direction of that a shared service organization would prescribe. And, of course, there is a disparity in the way services are delivered, how IT is managed, and I think recently we see in the security area some of that disparity showing up. Now, we looked at many, many models. We looked at private sector models, and we looked at public sector models of how to govern this issue. There are many choices that we had in front of us. One, which has been endorsed by numbers of corporations and certainly even some public sector entities, is a highly centralized model. For a number of reasons, we felt that that strictly, highly, totally centralized model was not one that was right for the state of Minnesota today, and was not probably implementable, nor was it appropriate. However, page 21, the recommended model, graphically, is what is known as a federated model or a federal model. This model will consolidate more authority and operations into a central hub while maintaining agency autonomy where useful, where necessary, in a highly coordinated fashion, however. And this is just a high-level graphical depiction of what this looks like. Again, much stronger central leadership, much stronger enforcement of standards, consolidation of shared services into that utility function that we highlighted in an earlier graphic. This done in a directive but collaborative way, which is important. That is not our intent to get in the way of agency missions. It is not our intent to slow them down, as it were, unless slowing down is for the good of the enterprise, and we can get leverage through that process, and at the end of the day, to deliver better service and more economical service to the enterprise as a whole. Now, how will this work? Page 22.
Hold on one second, Mr. Payton. Representative Khan has a question.
Right at this point, before we leave these two pages, since they're right out there, would you explain how this recommended model differs from the centralized model if you put the agencies into the centralized model? Just would you explain how those three graphs would differ if you put the agencies into the centralized model?
Mr. Payton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Khan, yes, there are in existence in many agencies agency-specific systems that the agencies depend upon to deliver the services. There needs to be personnel in those agencies that are responsive to the day-to-day needs of the delivery of those systems and day-to-day support. Those would still reside in the agencies as opposed to bringing them all in into a total collaborative, a total pool, as it were. However, the delivery of those services over time will be done under a stronger central theme and central set of standards. But we think it's appropriate to have a portion of those agency resources in the agencies so that they can support the day-to-day operations and responsive to changes to those application systems. That's how it would differ.
Mr. Chairman, what I ask is if you put the agencies, if you added the little blobs that are the agencies around your centralized model, how would it look different from the recommended model under any circumstances?
Well, the way it would look different would be those agency resources that are supporting the specific applications would be in a central organization as opposed to residing in the agencies themselves.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Payton, I don't know that anyone would suggest, for example, that nobody would be allowed to have a personal computer. That they'd all, in the most centralized, that, you know, if you wanted to add up a column of figures, you'd have to go to some centralized system to do it. I can't imagine any centralized model that doesn't have some autonomy to use information technology out where people are doing it.
Mr. Payton. Mr. Chair, Representative, I would agree. It's an issue of balance, and we have to find that balance. Our view was that the balance and the effectiveness of the agencies in delivering their mission critical systems still required some resources to be residing in those agencies themselves. We have to find that right balance, however.
Representative Khan.
No, I'm trying to finish.
Okay. Are we on page 22 or 23?
We're on page 22.
Okay.
How will this work? In effect, we will have agency initiatives and enterprise initiatives that come through the planning process. Those will be part of the formulation of an overall enterprise plan driven by and coordinated by the Office of Enterprise Technology. In that process, as new plans come in and examination of existing situations are addressed, we will make a determination of where shared service is the most appropriate way to manage particular issues, as opposed to what may now reside in a distributed environment, a agency-centric environment. We also have a stronger hand in ensuring and developing architectural standards and enforcement of those standards, and we will be able to create an overall view of what the state is spending on an ongoing basis. Those shared services will result in the development of utility functions, again back to the pyramid graph, as we determine that that's the best way to manage those issues, as well as the development of oversight functions that may be distributed today but need to be centralized and managed out of the Office of Enterprise Technology. We believe that there will be instances in which specific systems need to be developed and managed by the agencies. However, and that's what the lower box outside of the Office of Enterprise Technology represents, but those will be done under a stricter framework of enforcement, oversight, and overall project management. Page 23, the last page.
Representative
Tan. Before we leave this page, would you explain how agency initiatives differ from enterprise initiatives?
Mr. Payton.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. Agency initiatives would be systems that serve only the mission of that particular agency and cannot be shared either through infrastructure or through delivery of services with other agencies.
So,
is
enterprise in a synonym for sharing?
Enterprise is, Mr. Chair, enterprise is synonymous with sharing, and that sharing can be done across more than one agency as well as pieces of sharing in terms of the overall infrastructure. So it is more or less synonymous with things that can be shared. However, being able to reconcile and have a point of view about agency-specific mission applications is part of the enterprise view. Being able to have a specific view of that and have made a specific decision in that regard is part of that enterprise also.
Well, Chairman, how will an agency decide which box what it wants to do goes into?
Mr. Payton?
Before they get to the Office of Enterprise Technology, so they have to make a decision on it.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the agency does not make that determination. That determination is made through the planning process and through an interaction, collaborative interaction with the Office of Enterprise Technology as well as the agency resources, which may be covered in the next slide with respect to how we intend to go about some of the overall management of the governance. The last slide. The Enterprise Office of Enterprise Technology, will house both high-level coordinative planning functions as well as shared services. These are going to have to be developed and managed in a collaborative style, but with direction set. And so there has to be some direction set and responsibility for, at the end of the day, the decisions being made. But this is going to be done and has to be done in collaboration with agency CIOs, agency staffs, as well as commissioners of those agencies who have mission-critical issues that they need to have managed and forwarded. We would expect to also make greater use of working groups, as well as make greater use of private sector experience and input through any number of governance councils that we will form. Again, my point here is that this process is fairly directive. It is fairly, in terms of strategy and enforcement strategy, but it is also collaborative with respect to how those strategies get developed and how they come to pass. Staffing resources for the initial Office of Enterprise Technology will be made immediately from a combination of the Office of Technology and the Intertechnologies Group. Both of those groups will be dissolved as they exist today and reformed in the mold of the new governance model, which is extensively covered in the Drive to Excellence publications, which I won't go through here today. And over time, as we see issues that need to be governed more centrally and coordinated more centrally, this Office of Enterprise Technology will have the authority to draw resources from agencies and to migrate them to this shared organization. And that's an important component, because as that central bubble gets larger and the smaller clusters outside get smaller, that is a literal interpretation of resource shift into a more centralized but collaborative model. The legislation before you positions the Office of Enterprise Technology and gives it the authority to drive this governance model and to begin to form and support the direction for the Drive to Excellence. That concludes my comments.
Thank you. Commissioner, did you have any wrap-up comments?
No, Mr. Chair. We turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you.
Commissioner?
Representative Solberg, I have a number of questions now on the overview.
As we've heard since overview, we're seeing kind of a centralized model. We talk about procurement people and so forth in the first presentation. I'll just take the Department of Natural Resources as an example. I mean, we've got regional headquarters and they do purchasing in regional areas, hopefully. And as we look at centralizing that, you take some of that authority away from them to go out down to the hardware store and purchase some of their supplies. And say, we've got to purchase it from this centralized supply, which may be in from Pennsylvania or from China. There are other models that are being used to be able to accomplish that type of centralization. I have a small company in Grand Rapids that's using technology, and they went to companies such as the utility company and Bland and Paper Company and others. Who Bland is owned by a Finnish company. It's a major worldwide company with plants all over the world, headquarters in Helsinki, and went to them and said, instead of purchasing everything through your central office, let us do it, and we can purchase those same commodities, we'll deliver them to you from the local hardware store. My Ace Hardware Store being able to bid and supply to a company that exists in Helsinki, Finland. One of the things I'm concerned about here is that we're gonna create a model that'll be down on Lafayette Avenue and not in Perry, Minnesota. That's a rhetorical question. It's a concern.
Commissioner, are we screwing our local business people so we can have slave labor from China supplying our items? That's kind of what I'm gleaning out of that.
You gleaned very well.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, absolutely not. In fact, in many cases, additional authority will be delegated to the agencies. The whole concept of a strategic sourcing model is that there's a centralized function that does the strategic sourcing, picks that Blandin as the possible supplier who has the capability to deliver through. That's a perfect example, Representative Solberg, of what we would love to do, who has the ability to deliver in the local community. In turn, we would delegate more of the day-to-day transactional purchasing to the agencies, which is where it ought to happen. But their selection will be from these contracts, these master agreements, which will enable those purchases to happen in the local community.
Commissioner, I think we have to be careful when we go down that master contract list. And let me just give you another example of that. We have a system in the state where we're building a backbone system called the 800 megahertz. And we went to a supplier of all of the a single source contractor. They will say it's not a single source, but the only one that's got the technology for that is Motorola. You can buy it from somebody else, but then that person has to pay Motorola a licensing fee. So Motorola is a single source contractor for a huge contract. And it may be good or bad, but I think you're losing some of the competitive edge when you do that type of single sourcing or selections.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, there is no intent to go to a single source for any commodity. We would offer choice, but more limited choice. So there's nothing in the Drive to Excellence that would demand single sourcing. Furthermore, if you look at, there are six waves of purchasing commodities that we would address in the Drive to Excellence. The kinds of things that you're talking about, the local emergency purchases, particularly required by DNR, are not in, the initial waves are in IT, computer equipment, office supplies, copy machines, the kinds of things that we would have a limited number of choices under master contract, but in no case would we be looking at a single source.
Commissioner, in reviewing the Senate omnibus bill, they have a $500,000 of savings that says because of Drive to Excellence, there's $500,000, and it just kind of states it in the bill, and I'm kind of wondering, is that doable, and did I miss something when we marked our bill up a little earlier, obviously, but just remembers it says no later than June 30th, 2006 and June 30th, 2007, Commissioner of Finance in consultation with the Commissioner of Admin must determine the savings attributable to Drive to Excellence in fiscal year 06 and 07 respectively. The savings are estimated to be $500,000 for the biennium. The Commissioner must deposit the amount each year in the general fund. Now, does that just pulled out of the sky, or what happened there?
Mr. Chair, we were not part of that, that exercise, so we're not entirely sure where the number was derived. Obviously, the Drive to Excellence report contains the possibility of savings greatly in excess of that in the biennium, presuming that the investments that are required to get those savings are made. So the $500,000 in the Senate bill is not attributable to any one of the six reform areas, to my knowledge. So I really cannot address its origin.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, or maybe Mr. Payden, I'm a little surprised by the graph that seems to show how dispersed everything is. I remember we put a pile of money into something called a statewide accounting system and a planned personnel system and so forth. Why aren't those considered to be centralized systems? More centralization do we need?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, those systems, MAPS, Semaphore, the ones that I think you're referring to, currently exist and are managed within the context of an agency IT staff. This new governance structure would propose that those kinds of systems be managed more centrally.
It is central.
Mr. Payden, is our payroll and so forth centralized right now in finance, or do we have separate?
Mr. Chair, that's in it. So yes, they are managed within an agency and they are centralized to some degree. Our analysis that we concluded within the Didexons indicated us that even outside of those agencies, there are multiple satellite systems that exist outside of even the bubbles that we have there. And so our attempt would be to leverage the resources across those agencies in a more coordinated way within a more simple hub.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner and Mr. Payden, despite some wiggle language in it, existing state law gave the Department of Administration absolute control over any IT project in any agency. If centralized control was what we wanted for these, how did they ever end up getting this dispersed operation? And I certainly, I probably know more than I wanted to know about the development of statewide system and the problem with the planned payroll system and the problems that the development of those went into. That's when we started requiring, which obviously has also been not used as well as we thought it would. That's when we started requiring outside risk management to be done for any major project. But I think this report is the first time I ever heard that they weren't being centrally, managed. That was the whole argument over those years when we did those projects, that they had to be. And if they weren't, it must have been. Now, obviously, I'm not talking to, I really like things to go well, but when things don't go well, the thing I like best to do then is assign the blame. But, so obviously I'm not talking to the people who, were responsible for that, but why, how did that happen?
Mr. Bader,
Commissioner, you have a former incarnation, so
I'll take a stab, Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn. I think it's an important question, and I'm glad we understand that some of us inherited the current situation. In looking at a couple of other states, I find an interesting quote from at least a couple of them saying that, we have to understand what has gone wrong or not quite right in the past, but our primary obligation is to set a direction for the future. The issue of centralization is what may be one of semantics. Our centralized model provides a new dimension to centralization, where it is in fact centralized within some agencies. Now, how did we get here? The Office of Technology, if you look at the current statutory language, is responsible primarily for project review. It is not responsible for determining where things get managed or how they get managed.
Was also responsible for a statewide architecture. And once you control the architecture, you certainly control an awful lot of other stuff.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Carter, and yes it is. If one were to look at the current architectural definitions, they are so loosely formed as to make all seven email systems in the state architecturally compliant. Okay, now the issue is, what do we mean by standards and how hard are we going to drive those standards and are we going to operationalize them? Okay, that is a fundamental shift in why the language is being strengthened. The other aspect of the Office of Technology that I found in talking to folks that's not clearly understood is the Office of Technology today has no oversight for ongoing operations. That is the development of data centers. The ongoing operations, they are a project review-based organization. This model that we're suggesting has a great deal more authority, if not, in fact, runs shared operations across the state, fundamentally different than the past.
Well,
Representative Kahn?
Mr. Chairman, any time you did an upgrade, so I don't know about this just ongoing, any time you spent
I don't remember what the threshold was, but I don't think it was that high money. That approval has to come from the Department of Administration. I mean, unless it was, what happened was that the Department of Administration also had the ability to delegate that. And that may have been done at times that was inappropriate. But there was, and my partner, Representative Krinke, was here to go over some of the old stories. Right. But, this, the project review was something, and for example, you say, well, they only have project review. Well, the project review starts before the project is initiated.
Mr. Payton.
I'm just saying that the Department of Administration had the ability to say no change and go ahead, and that it probably didn't do enough of that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think you're correct on a number of fronts, but just to clarify, the scope of authority for the Office of Technology is primarily limited to the governor's budget, which is primarily limited to new projects. The spending that goes on within agencies on basic infrastructure is not, as I understand it, under the review of the Office of Technology today. Now, I could be wrong, but that's my understanding. But that doesn't really, at this point, it's important to note, but it, and in fact, if it has not been executed in the way that you suggest that your understanding was, and is certainly your understanding the way it should be executed, is where this model is going.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just because when we look at the governor's budget, we tend to concentrate on new projects, doesn't mean that that's what the governor's budget contains. The governor's budget is the whole financing for all of state government. When I first came into the legislature, we actually looked at books that went down to the line item for each agency. Took a lot of time, but we probably understood it a little bit better, and then it was decided to raise. Each year the level was raised higher and higher. But just because we concentrate on new projects doesn't mean that the governor's budget, and I think we're thankful to the Office of the Legislative Auditor to go into some of the other things. But we expect the people who are in control of managing things to be looking at the ongoing projects in each budget cycle. And certainly whenever there's an upgrade, and I guess with any information system that I've seen, you're certainly doing serious upgrades on an ongoing basis. And every one of them should have come to the attention of the Office of Technology at a certain level. Certainly at the level of having a separate email system. The reason, and I was one of that bipartisan group of legislators who stood up at the introduction of this bill, so I certainly support it, but, I certainly want to make sure that it's structured to do what it's trying to promise to do. I guess I've just been disappointed too many times with attempting to say that this is something that we should do and thinking we had done it and then it turns out in reality it's not true at all.
Mr. Chair,
I
agree with you. It is quite an interesting process that we've been through. One of the things that I discovered as we went through the process and began looking at the specific legislation was how much there really was already in existence that would have enabled a different mode of operation. Having done that, though, we also discovered that we needed to make it more explicit and put the strength behind it to make sure that there was no misinterpretation of, and we also had to put structurally the resources behind that to make it happen. So you're absolutely, absolutely correct with respect to your comments. And it is our intent now to, I think, live up to the intention of a lot of thoughts that were in existence prior to this.
I have a question on a different piece on the overview. We talked about licensing and multiple licenses and so forth. Is Drive to Excellence working with the local units of government? And if you want to open a restaurant in St. Paul right now, I would suspect you need a St. Paul license of some sort, probably a Ramsey County help, whatever. The state of Minnesota has to give you some things. Are you working with local governments? Are they part of the team on streamlining? Because if we might be able to consolidate 9 state licenses and make it a one-stop shop, but what if the city of St. Paul requires 3 and Ramsey County requires another 2? It's all kind of disjointed. And how is that, or is there a plan to bring them in now this summer?
Mr. Chair, sure. I agreed with you until you got to this summer. Clearly, we need to get our act together as an executive branch. The next step, and we've already had those discussions, is to embrace the Secretary of State's office because business registration occurs there as well. And so branching out beyond into the constitutional offices would be our first step. And then obviously the next step would be local units. And we've had very preliminary discussions, in particular with the counties, that some place in the roadmap we would like to get to the point where the one-stop shop is truly a multi-government one-stop shop. But we are a long way from being able to do that. Right. Years, not months.
Years, not months on that one?
That would be my judgment.
Okay. I hear a lot of concern from business people that if you start a business in Minnesota, particularly a small business, that it is just so frustrating and you don't know, even people, and I don't even own really a personal computer per se myself, so it's probably bad for me to say this, but I've had people ask about, like, if you want to sell things on eBay, they don't even know, are we taxed on this or not? Is this a business? If I'm selling grandma's junk out of my attic, I don't know if I'm supposed to pay tax on it or not, versus if I do it otherwise. And I don't know. It's probably a whole different department than what you are, of commerce or someone else. To me, we almost need a manual on how to do this stuff. To me, I just assume let people do their thing and keep the government out of their life. But obviously, we can't do that anymore in this day and age. But it'd be nice if we could kind of come up with a way, a one-stop manual on if you start a business, here's the licenses you need. And if you adhere to what this manual says, we're not going to send some ogre after you with a meat axe on April 15th or whatever to shut you down. And that's what I'm hearing from people, particularly with my district being near South Dakota, where I think the licensing requirements, taxes, workers' comp, everything else is exponentially less than Minnesota. It does become kind of an obvious problem, I think, for those folks out there.
Mr. Chair, points well taken, and you've really reinforced and endorsed a number of the key principles in Drive to Excellence. One is looking at us as an enterprise, and the enterprise just isn't the 24 cabinet-level agencies in state government. It is every government service performed in the state of Minnesota. The second one is transparency. It is incredibly difficult for a citizen to find out how to do something amongst the many state agencies. They can go to North Star, but North Star is a facade, and behind that facade are over 500 separate siloed websites, and navigating amongst those to try to figure out which agency has your where you can get your need met is really very complex, and we would like that's part of the customer service innovation that would be in a later stage of Drive.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was taken by the statement in here that 85% of people want to do all their business transactions on the web, and that we only have 15% and so forth. I wonder if that number went up or down after we had the legislative auditor's report come out. And one of the questions, one of my disappointments in this report, and I've already talked to about it with Mr. Nobles, is that it only seemed to focus on the department, and it never got down to any culpability or, inaction or something from the Department of Administration that obviously had okayed the go-ahead of this system without its security system. And I can see, knowing from the debates, I don't know what went on in the department, but knowing the debates that we've had on the House floor between the people who wanted competence and security and so forth, and we wanted you know, an information system to be just as functional as it could be, and the people who wanted to go real fast, and they were from, I mean, the best discussion. And again, if we had Representative Krinke here, maybe we could have reenacted some of it. The best discussion was the issue of CRIMNET, where the proponents, and they were on both sides. I remember, you know, can you imagine a pair of Stanek and Wagenius against Krinke and me? And
I remember that.
I think we actually won it on the House floor, but then, of course, the bill came back from, went to Random and Conference Committee and came back with everything we had done taken out. But, so I think I just have a specific, I assume that you people have read this report and gone over it carefully and so forth. And so I really have a particular question about what this bill would do, because I'm not sure I see that in the language of the bill. And so the question is, how exactly would the development and operation of the motor vehicle registration system have been different if this had been law? And exactly what provisions in this bill that we have before us? I know, Mr. Chairman, you have an amendment, and I don't know if we should deal with the amendment first.
But
it prevented the weaknesses that the audit uncovered.
Representative Conn, I think what we should do is we'll get on the delete all, I believe, which is what integrates some things together. And I think what we'd do is I will move that House File 2243 be recommended to pass and be referred to Ways and Means. And then I will move the DE3 delete all amendment to the bill to get the shape in so we can get on to the conversation.
Okay.
So are members okay with that so we can move on to the bill?
Sure.
Okay. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed nay. Okay. The amendment is adopted. I'm looking on page 2 of the bill, Commissioner, where we move away from reviewing and coordinating. We actually get to approving and managing. So we have a direct line of accountability. It's one reason I think the bill is good. I see Mr. Nobles is here. We may have you come up if there are questions that arise from the auditor's report. But is this kind of the pieces that we're looking at for a direct line of accountability? And, Commissioner, if you want to take it or Mr. Payden, it's fine. But I think Representative Conn has hit the nail on the head from the auditor's report, is if something bad happens, ultimately, who's responsible and what is the line of accountability in terms of saying, here's the problem, what is the solution in terms of what could we prevented by having this bill? Would, on page 2, but if you had to approve this, would you folks have not approved it if you saw some pieces of the system that were vulnerable, or just kind of give us a little discussion on that?
I specifically want the question that I assume that you people have had a chance to look at this leak, everything amendments, or I hope it's not that different from the bill. But the specific question I want is I want to see exactly what provisions in the bill would have prevented the weaknesses that the audit uncovered. And I do understand that there was a little bit from conversations, that there was probably some conversation with someone, an outside consultant said, you know, about the driver's license online system, that you either do it right or we do it fast, and somebody said it's got to make the deadline for the state fair. And, you know, so the answer was do it, meet the deadlines and do it fast. So, you know, that's a separate issue. But I'd like to see the provisions in this bill where,
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Payden.
Representative Conn. I'm struggling with where and how to answer your question, but I have the answers. There are in specific language in the bill that positions us to develop this governance model, which I've shared with you, to make sure this doesn't happen. At the end of the day, the accountability should be with the Office of Enterprise Technology and the state CIO for what happened. Today, it's not. If you look throughout the bill, in the responsibilities, line 11, and throughout the bill, the language is specifically meant to transition from a coordinative oversight review to a manage and lead tone. And of course, the organization behind it has to be put together to ensure that that happens. If you went to, we're talking a bit about cybersecurity, I believe. If you went to page 7, line 17, our attempt, of course this was drafted before before the events of the last couple of weeks, was meant to strengthen in particular this issue. You will see that the Chief Information Officer will develop the policies not only for the state's centralized computer facilities, which was referred to or known as Intertech, I would guess, in the context of this, but also throughout all facilities in the state, as well as where things are being done within the agencies, hold them more strongly accountable to the guidelines of the established enterprise policy, which was not the case. Well, that was our intent. This was our intent to strengthen the language in a particular bill with respect to issues like cybersecurity, as well as many, many others.
President Solberg.
Mr. Chair, if I look at the language in current statute, there's probably a difference between cyber and data security system. I think that's a schematic type of thing. But it's obvious that the commissioner, and I think the commissioner of administration, shall develop security policies, guidelines, and standards. That's been current law for a long time. Has that been done? And were they not followed?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I need to defer to Mr. Payton.
Mr. Payton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I think there is a working group within the Office of, or directed out of the Office of Technology called the Security Domain Group, which develops standards, high-level standards, but in effect, the operation to enforce those standards is not in place, and the standards are loosely enough defined as not to be a standard at all, in my opinion.
Mr. Payton, I'm looking at the bottom on lines 27 through 30. Each department or agency head is responsible for security of the department or agency's data, which is when we were talking about either public safety or, I'm not sure which, Representative Tom, what department exactly was that? It was public safety, wasn't it, that had the problems? So are we talking about the public safety commissioner with a lapse of having detailed policies on cybersecurity? To me, it's, you know, kind of who's responsible ultimately for this? Who is it that we blame, or who is it that we say, hey, get your act together? Because in my opinion, if we read all the way through, the commissioner comes up with the guidelines and standards and so forth and consults with the attorney general. But ultimately, at the end here, the department head of each department has the control of their own website security. This is just the way I'm reading it, which is one reason I thought this bill was supposed to clean it up and try to tie everything together with the information officer. Representative Kahn.
Well, the critical part, it's nice to have this all in the bill in front of us because we can see what was there. One little part is missing. Look at section 6 on page 6 and look at what the existing language does. The with the limit in, I remember all of these things were put in. Every bit of this control was fought over bitterly at some point. I think the basic control was in and was attempted to be wiggled away. But that, and again, the procedures developed under 7th Subdivision 4 were really pretty good. And this has been in state government for a long time, longer than I ever. I think when I started working on this, at least this was a basis to work on. And that was pretty strong. That's pretty strong language. You know, the commissioner, if they don't approve it, the commissioner of finance cancels the unencumbered balance of any project slated for this. This is why in the fight with Stanek on the House floor, and in the which went on, there was a line in the bill which took away any approval from CRIMNET. And we took that out. Amazing, I usually just remember who was on each side and who won, not the details of the fight. This one, and we were able to take out that line that took that let CRIMNET totally free. And of course then it went on to conference committee and then just came back with that line stuck right back.
stuck right back in it. But what Sanic and company didn't know is they didn't know about, you know, they only knew what was in their bill. They didn't know about the language in 16E, which, of course, we knew about, so we were kind of laughing at this fight over the hairy arm that was sticking out without doing it. But the problem is, if you didn't use it, it was useless. I mean, that's the canceling the appropriation in an unexpended balance is, you don't see that very often in review and oversight type things. And that's the commissioner says we don't like it, and the commissioner of finance does it. At least that's what the law says. Now, the problem is that the people who want care taken in doing these things only have a few windows of opportunity to make that point, you know, right now, thanks to the legislative orders report. So that's why we shouldn't miss this opportunity to do this, because the people who want to go fast and go ahead, you know, all we can do is talk about computer systems being incompetent, and the opponents get up and talk about criminals running loose in the street and raping and pillaging and murdering if we don't allow them to go ahead as fast as they can. And so they've got all the rhetoric on their side. And so it's this committee's job. This is the one place we can get this done competently.
Representative Solberg, it's not only the committee's job, but it's other commissioners as well.
Yeah.
That have to have we can give them the authority, and they've had the authority to do that, but whether they exercise it or not, from May 23rd, we're back home. We expect these things to pass the file over, but to be reviewed.
And
Representative Kahn?
Mr. Chairman, and then it's ultimately, of course, the governor's authority. So that was why it was kind of exciting to see this governor put this as a priority issue. We just need to change his direction a little bit so he understands the important direction he needs to take on it. But, but it's very hard for any governor to have information policy be important when, you know, catching crooks or, you know, creating parks or something like that is so much more publicly appealing.
Representative Kahn, we have a good way to get into the A8 amendment, yeah. And I'm thinking this is what you talked to me on the floor about.
Yes.
Representative Kahn moves the A8 amendment. This is to tighten up security and information technology systems oversight, and Representative Kahn, if you could explain your amendment.
Yeah, I just think that just this then, one of the questions that we had in reading the bill, and I still want to answer to my question of the specific provisions which would have prevented that in the bill, but I think that this really says that security is going to be a very important concern. And I think that you won't get a system where somebody says speed is more important than security. We also need to make sure that the state, this is something which only just occurred to me, and I don't know how fast, this issue that when the breach of security occurred in California, with whatever that system was, because California had a state law that required them to notify anyone whose credit may have been breached by that system, to notify anybody. You know, we probably, and I know that a similar law has been introduced in the state, but we probably ought to specifically write that the Department of Administration is responsible to notify anyone whose security has been breached. But I think this just then, Mr. Shepard wrote it for me. I think I told him what I wanted to do, and I think it just specifically puts an emphasis on security.
Commissioner, I know you maybe haven't had a chance to read it over. I did talk to Representative Kahn about this. It wasn't typed up till last night, but could you comment on the amendment, please?
Representative Kahn, Mr. Payton, and I were able to see this morning, and, you know, to be honest with you, anything that clarifies and strengthens the authority of the Chief Information Officer is much desired, and I believe this falls within that definition.
Are there any questions on the amendment from members? Okay, Representative Kahn moves the A8 amendment. Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed nay. Amendment is adopted. We have the A6 amendment. This, I believe, was Representative Kahn's amendment as well.
Yes. Again, I just
Representative Kahn moves the A6 amendment.
Now, I noticed that the structure has been a little bit improved by making the office report by the on the first page. It's an agency and saying and somewhere where it says it reports directly to the governor. Maybe it says that on the
governor's attorney.
Yeah, governor was appointed.
Yeah.
But I just think, you know, and again, over the years we've had various discussions about this, and I think Mark has done it in a very elegant way. That the, you know, this person isn't called a commissioner. They're going to be treated as a substandard person by other agencies. And we're just dealing in semantics at this point. And, you know, I think when you look at this, if this is going to be as important as we think everything is, we really need to call the person a commissioner. And, you know, if I know the Senate has a
Is this like in the blue book that when we flip through, we're going to see the technology person pop up now? And
I hope so. Maybe right at the front. Well, she, maybe she called the Office of Applied Technology. So Applied Technology, so it gets to the front of the alphabet. No, behind administration. But this is, you know, I just think this is important in terms of the structure of how other commissioners react.
And Representative, does this affect salary or any of the costs? I think Mr. Shepard did a good job of trying to get the accountability in without all the extraneous unintended consequences.
With the various languages that we put in, Mr. Payton is probably being paid more than the governor is. I know it's public information and I didn't look it up, but just various abilities that we have to pay doctors and technological geeks more. He's probably, I hope he's getting paid more than the governor. So we didn't want to put those limitations in.
Commissioner, you have a thought on, I know this was important to committee members previously, and so I'm trying to work to get the bill finished finally.
Well, I mean, Mr. Chair, obviously it is done in a variety of ways in states. We've looked at the states' schemes. As you know, the governor's position was that he wanted this to get the attention it deserves, and while it was appointed by him and reports to him, he wanted that sub-cabinet involvement in a collaborative kind of way.
Chairman,
I said earlier, I think we want this to work, and I also just kind of want to go on record as saying we are not here to explain or to be defensive about actions or inactions of the past. We'd like to look forward, and we want, the stakes are way too high for this not to work this time, and we know there have been many iterations and many attempts to make it work, statutory language, and anything that we can do to ensure its success, we would want to have happen.
Senator Khan.
What if I promise to defend the governor against any political attacks that he expanded his cabinet by creating another commissioner? Go on record today.
Representative Khan, could you come to the state convention and also give a fiery speech in favor of the governor? I'm sure that would help him.
Maybe on a later political climate, we could have the mayor of St. Paul be the surrogate for a representative.
With that, I know this is also an important piece for Representative Krenke, and we do have to go to Ways and Means, and I'm not interested in having a large fight over this at this point, but I think we need to discuss it and work through this, but this bill does need to move out, and I've told folks that it would be nice to try to have these discussions as we move forward. So Representative Khan renews her motion on the A6 amendment. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. It is adopted. The A7 amendment, I believe, is Representative Krenke's amendment. Representative Krenke is in the tax committee. Would someone like to move this for him?
Yeah, I'd like to move it.
Okay. Representative Khan moves the A7 amendment on behalf of Representative Krenke. Representative Khan, what does this do?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is the one that we've talked again and again about language. And I appreciate the fact that this is an enterprise, but I'm much more interested with it being competent and official and using words such as that. And Representative Krenke and I have discussed this, and one of the things that I've also said is I think when you treat things, you know, I guess I took Strunken Road, whatever. You know, I had classic creative, classic handbook of
of understandable English when I went to college long ago, and one of the things I told you was never put unnecessary words in. And I thought that, and the other, one of the things I've always said is whenever anyone sets up a blue ribbon commission, you know it's not going to do anything serious because they wouldn't have to call it a blue ribbon commission. It's words would just speak for itself. So I'd like to take this fancy word out. I know it's in the Senate bill and we'll go on to conference. And I just think, you know, the Office of Technology ought to speak for itself in saying how important technology is to the state without putting this extra word in.
Okay. And this is something Representative Krenke has talked to me about often. So,
I think if we pass this one, we can send the bill out unanimously.
I've heard that. That's why I think it might be a good idea to adopt it. Commissioner, any thoughts on this? Assuming we don't want to come back to this committee for a third time with this bill.
Mr. Chair, and consistent with my earlier comments, I want this to work. On the other hand, I don't want to fall on my sword on this point, but I do want to emphasize a couple of points. We didn't dream this word up. This word is in place in other states to define their new way of looking at information technology. It is, I'm even embarrassed to say some of the states, Missouri and Kentucky. But also, our neighbors Wisconsin and Iowa use it in their title. It is, I also point out, in the most recently issued strategic report for the U of M, they have now taken an enterprise view and are using that term to describe their shared services environment going forward. So it isn't a word that you just use to make it sound more interesting or sexy. It is to signal something new and different, that we are looking at this differently. Secondly, we've talked here just briefly about the ineffectivity of the Office of Technology in the past, for whatever reason. And we don't need to go further into that, but we would like to distinguish this new organization from that organization of the past. And one way to do that is with a name change. We'd be open to other ideas as to name changes that might similarly signal we're looking at IT on a total organizational basis.
Representative Kahn?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that we adopt this now. We then get, we know we have a different version in the Senate bill, so we have lots of time to think about it between then and now. And one of the things I would not object to at all is something that talks about the importance of the enterprise aspect of the enterprise technology in part of the definitions or in part of the philosophy of that. I don't know quite how to craft that right now, but I would certainly support doing something like that. I agree with the idea that part of what this is going to do is move on in a more enterprising way, and I would not mind at all saying that somewhere in the language, as opposed to having it in the name.
Perhaps we'll find a thesaurus, Representative Kahn, and we'll think of something that everyone can agree. If you and Representative Krenke can agree to it, certainly I think most everybody else would be able to.
Oh, no, Mr. Chair.
Or it's 132-2 the other way.
I think they're examples of both.
Well, not on the amendment. Are you talking about the amendment?
Yeah, okay. We're on the amendment.
Oh, so I'll have something on something different.
Any other discussion on the amendment? Okay, on the E7 amendment, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay.
No.
Adopted. Are there any more amendments that members have on the bill as amended? Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, I want to talk about a little bit about the budget and the base budget and where you're going, what the governor has recommended, so forth, for this office. In order for us to have this kind of a strengthening of the office, you're going to have some resources. And I noticed in your presentation, I think you said you needed to have $17 million investment, but of course that's in much of that would be in computer work or technology, hardware, software, I would think. But in the actual operation of your budget, what has the governor recommended?
Mr. Chair, there's $1.8 million in general funds in each year of the biennium in the governor's budget, which would be transferred to this new organization, as well as the some $79 million in revolving fund money.
And what does that compare to your base?
Mr. Chair, it is a $602,000 reduction in the general fund area.
Each year?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Silberg, yes.
So your base was about 2.4, and you're cutting your base by a third, and you're going to do a better job?
Mr. Chair, Representative Silberg, that's correct.
Ms. Roberts, that's reflected in our omnibus bill on the base reduction to admin, correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
We're tracking that through the omnibus bill numbers.
It sounds like my principal said, well, you know, you have 30 kids in your classroom, and we'll put 45 in, and you'll do a better job.
Mr. Chair, I can let Mr. Payden, since he will be administering that budget, respond as well. But I think, as he indicated earlier, we are going through a fundamental restructuring of the Information Technologies Group as well as the Office of Technology. And in that course of that restructuring, we're looking for the critical skill sets. That's point one. Point two is that we have 2,400 people in the state of Minnesota doing information technology work. We intend to tap into those resources. There are outstanding, skilled people in the agencies who can be tapped in to be part of this enterprise organization to supplement the current resources in the Office of Technology.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd like to have a little bit of information on, if we're going to give you this additional authority, how you intend to manage the one-third cut.
Commissioner or Mr. Payton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Silberg, that's one of the critical financial challenges is to, I'll say, put our money where our mouth is, as it were. We believe we have synergies between resources that are currently in the Office of Technology, resources that are currently in the Intertechnologies Group, and resources that are in agencies that need to be drawn into this enterprise. Our challenge is to deal with this as a zero-sum game, to manage the transition by being creative in how we recombine those resources to be more effective, and we believe we can do that.
Mr. Chairman, I have to ask maybe the financial people, Helen, maybe. Do you have authority to charge other agencies for your services?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, absolutely, and that is in the legislation that's before you, is the ability to define those services and the ability to allocate the cost of those services back.
And Mr. Chair, what do you expect that charge to be? We must have some projections on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, we don't have a financial projection, but in the governance model, we're at the early stages of the definition. We certainly have defined those areas which we believe are fairly distributed today, which need to be more tightly coordinated and consolidated, including such things as security, data centers, telecom management, help desk support, among others. Those are identified in the Drive to Excellence recommendation. This legislation gives us the authority to begin to task groups to develop specific plans for that, and the financial aspects of those will be a product of that group, of that work.
Mr. Chairman, a different related item. I've never used the internet or anything for my automobile license, thank goodness, but I do buy my fishing license, hunting license, and they do that over the wires as well. Has there been any problem in the breach of security on those systems?
Mr. Payton, do you know, or I know Mr. Nobles wants to come up and see if they've done any investigations on that yet. Mr. Payton, do you know of any?
Mr. Chair, Representative Silberg, no, we know of nothing, of none. If you might have, we are pulling together and have pulled together a group of security experts on a statewide basis based upon the governor's directive to do another examination. will leverage off the office of OLA's office in that regard. We have asked agencies to weigh in on this to us, and there's no evidence of any breaches at this point. But we're going to go through a very disciplined process of ensuring that is the case over the weeks ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if it's been completed. Did the governor's order to shut down those systems include those systems such as hunting and fishing license and so forth?
Mr.
Fishing
Chair,
opener coming when Mr. Payden
wants to... Mr. Chair, the governor did not order us to shut down the systems. He ordered us to do an evaluation of those systems. We've done a cursory evaluation. We're going to be doing a more in-depth evaluation. To date, we do not believe there are any substantive of exposures, but we're going to go after it with some zeal over the weeks ahead.
Mr. Chair, one final question. Will we get a report to the legislature on that, those activities?
Mr. Payden?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we are in the process of creating a plan. We have given a preliminary copy of that plan to Commissioner Badger for review. As soon as we have reviewed that plan, we'll probably be going public with respect to the timelines and the deliverables of that plan.
Representative.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's interesting to hear that the former chair of Ways and Means is less fiscally prudent than me. I like the fact that I was saved by my essential cheapness, because as I was about to renew my car registration, and I went happily to the website and discovered there was an extra fee for the credit card transaction, I just instinctively just filled it out and put a stamp on the envelope and sent it in by mail. So, again, the things my mother taught me always hold through in the end.
Appreciate your frugality. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Payne, or Commissioner, this bill and this enterprise relates primarily to the state agencies under control of the government. How do you anticipate your efforts interacting with the information systems operated by the Office of the Secretary of State?
Mr. Chair, we've had initial discussions, as I've indicated, with Madam Secretary and with members of her staff. There is an interest on her part to learn what we're doing and to be involved in it in later stages once we have determined our plan and started to execute our plan. So it would be through collaboration, not through any kind of mandate at this point.
Representative Blaine.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Badger, as I go back and look through some of the first things we talked about on the priorities, and I'm curious. We talked about the number of FTEs we have in a lot of in some of the five priority areas, and I applaud the initiative to try and find better efficiencies in state government. And I'm just curious. Do we have an idea about the number or the percentage of FTEs that will be reduced with the efficiency? And maybe you had gone over that before and I missed that, but I was just curious about that now. Because in my estimation, that's probably addresses the fiscal end of things in the long term rather than the technology piece, Mr. Payden, which may be a one-stop deal rather than looking at the long-term goal of trying to eliminate unnecessary labor.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, Representative Blaine, the savings of Drive to Excellence really come from a variety of areas, one of which is through reduced purchase prices for the materials, that goods and services that we source. But indeed, there has been an estimate, very rough estimate, of about 1,300 employees
statewide or throughout the agencies that would be displaced as we bring some of these services together over the course of 5 years as we implement. That is, I believe, somewhat conservative. It is, however, only 7% of the expected attrition of state employees. So the replacement rates would be roughly 90% given the kind of planning we have here. Now, we again think that we can do better than that. I think that we can achieve greater savings in personnel costs. Again, but the whole plan was to map it to attrition without restructurings or relocations or layoffs.
So, Ms. Chairman, thank you. Ms. Badgerl, so I understand you correctly, we would restaff 90% of these positions? Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chair, Representative Blaine, I didn't mean to say that. I'm sure there will be other things going on in state government mm-hmm. that would require rationalization of agencies, including further budget reductions, just solely attributable to the business cases that are included within DRIVE, that is the back office functions that would be combined into shared service organizations. We estimate roughly 1,300 employees currently doing those services in various agencies would not be replaced.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Badgerl, and then just so I want to be clear about this, so then that would be about a 7% reduction? Was that correct, or did I misunderstand you? And I apologize. Estimate.
Mr. Chair, Representative Blaine, I haven't done the numbers in terms of total state workforce, but it's darn close. Actually, the 7% related to 7% of current attrition. So the numbers of people, we expect 2,500 people to be leaving state government per year over that five-year period. 1,285 of them would not be replaced. That happens to work out to be mathematically 7%.
Okay.
So it's a different 7%, but actually I think it is relatively close to 7% of total workforce.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Okay, any other discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, Mr. Payton, I was hoping for a little more detailed answer to my question. I'd like to return to that for a moment. The reason that I raised the question about the interaction with the systems operated by the Secretary of State are that I hope you're aware that federal law regarding elections requires that the Secretary of State's voter registration system interact with state agencies, the Department of Health, the Department of Public Safety, with the court systems as well. And I think that given the complexity of those interactions, that our concern for security really needs to be addressed there. And I'm wondering if you have, what conversations you have had about that and what you do contemplate.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, I misunderstood your question. I'm sorry. I was thinking it was in the context of our licensing initiative and whether we would embrace the Secretary of State's business registration processes. I was not thinking of it in terms of voter registration. I'm not personally familiar with our activities with the Secretary of State. Are you? But we certainly can make sure that we are involved.
Any other questions or
Mr.
Payton?
If I could just comment, we recognize the Secretary of State being one entity, other entities outside the executive agency being others. We know that we have to get a handle on our disparate, fragmented approach within the executive agencies. That will position us to be more proactive and collaborative with Secretary of State, and certainly if there are laws that prescribe us to do so, we will step up to that. But it's very difficult for anybody from the outside to deal with the state right now in a total from a total perspective, because we don't have one from a security perspective. It would be agency by agency, and our movement is to get us in a position to be there.
Representative Solberg.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I know that they're constitutionally separated offices between the governor and the auditor and the Secretary of State, But it seems to me that we should have those conversations now instead of after you've done something, and then go to them and meantime that they're spending all kinds of monies to be able to operate their system. And if we mandate that, you know, as we had earlier conversations about interaction with local units of government, the place to interact with the local units of government many times is the state auditor's office for information. And it would seem to me that we could give you some authority in law to that the Secretary of State should be getting systems in place that aren't secure or don't have some kind of an approval. And later on, you know, if you get yours, you got your model all done and it's perfect, and then you go to the Secretary of State and you say, oh, sorry, we can't talk to you because our systems are different. Or the auditor, why aren't we having those conversations now with those agencies? Those departments. And the Attorney General is another example, I would think.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my comment, I'm sorry if my comment was construed to indicate that we wouldn't have conversations with them. We certainly will and should, as well as other entities like the University of Minnesota and Minsky and others. It would be in our intent to have conversations and understandings of where we're going and to look for synergies. This legislation, however, the scope of authority is confined, is my understanding, and should and probably should be, to the executive branch. Our style will be one of collaborating and discussing with all agencies about where the opportunities for leverage should be and take advantage of those for certain.
Mr. Chair, is there any statutory authority to ensure that there's security within the other systems?
I'm not sure. Mr. Payton, do you know, or should we? I know Mr. Shepard might know, but...
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do not know.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the Secretary of State's office has an awful lot of information on businesses, besides voting things that they do. There's huge information on business activities. I would hope that there was at least some statutory authority for that to be a secured system. Others people can help answer that question.
Is there someone from the Secretary of State's office that's in the audience? Okay. I know you can look up a lot of things on the system, but we just want people breaking in and you can find things out if people voted. Or I know one time they had this thing with some sports star about you all need to go out and vote, and then they found out that he hadn't voted himself.
That was true.
Oh, was it Ventura?
Never mind.
That's public information.
Public information. Sports entertainment. Winnie was a sports star.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Kahn?
Well, one suggestion is, is there anything preventing... One of the things that the legislature has done, which is absolutely just great, made my life more simpler, is when the Senate wants to just go into using MN as the end of our, so the House and the Senate, we have House.mn, which I understand we pay a commission to use that. We pay a commission to Mongolia because it's their country title. And is there any reason why the rest of the state shouldn't do that?
Mr. Payton, have you thought about that before?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm very thin ice here. I believe that we have governance over domains and the naming of those domains, and to the extent that we need to drive consistency and for interaction, we'll do that.
Mr. Payton, is there anything that, and this may be part of Drive to Excellence, about people using email on the state system? I mean, I get letters from agencies constantly. I get one from DNR about we're starting a new exciting park program, and I had all these other legislators telling me they got this letter too. This was in December, I believe. We get, holiday greetings from agencies, which I don't think should be done at all. But, they could be sent over email if they want to wish us whatever, Happy Christmas or whatever correct term it is. But are we saying to agencies, use email? in all extent possible and not send letters out to other agencies. And I think every state employee who's full-time has an email address, if I'm not mistaken, and every legislator has one. I know one legislator or two that have never opened their computer, but their LAs get their email form. So, you know, is there anything being done, or is that going to be part of Drive to Excellence, that we utilize email as much as possible? Because I think that that's such a, you send 201 stamped letters out, I think that's such a waste of agency resources, and we all have an email address. Every legislator has one.
Mr. Chair, certainly as we start to drive more standardization on email, the use of email will become more straightforward and more robust. Right now, you could not send out one email to all state employees. There is no one directory. So the ability to do that certainly will be enhanced. Now, the policy as to what we and the enforcement policy is a whole different subject area, but certainly, yes, their ability to use email and email applications, as they're known as, will be enhanced, greatly enhanced by standard.
Mr. Payton, my understanding is that Employee Relations used to mail this big benefit booklet out to us, and that is now sent over email, and that's one reason Doer was able to take the huge percent cut that they did in the last biennium, as they say the mailing cost to every state employee by being able to email the benefit booklet changes out rather than snail mail them out, and the postage and the assemblage is just a huge... So there must be some way of getting all the state employees on email, because Doer is doing it somehow.
Mr. Chair, we may be mixing email with web access issues. I believe that's what we're probably doing. Email is a close cousin of web access, but okay. They're different issues.
Okay, I gotcha.
Okay.
We wanted to vote by 11. Is there anyone in the audience that needs to testify in this bill for or against? The chair will renew his motion that House File 2243 be recommended to pass and referred to Ways and Means. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those nay. Bill's passed. Thank you very much. Members, we will have at least one more hearing sometime the next week and a half that will relate to the state auditor's report on local government lobbying. That may be a joint hearing with local government. We haven't decided yet.
And pensions, don't we?
And we do have a pension bill that needs to come up at some point. We don't have possession of it yet, so when we do, we'll have a prompt hearing and act accordingly. Meeting adjourned.